It's been a while since I've started the show this way, but let's begin with a dramatic reading, shall we? You can always count on me, and I can count on you. Good times, bad times, in between, my friends will see me through. We'll be sharing wonderful times every day, all together singing our song, growing in every way. Say hello to your friends, Babysitter's Club. Say hello to the people who care. Nothing's better than friends, Babysitter's Club, because you know that your friends are always there. If I'm feeling down and out, if I'm feeling blue, I know I can lean on you. My friends will see me through. We're growing up together, never to part. I'm sending you my love, straight from the heart. Say hello to your friends, Babysitter's Club. I cannot take credit for these terribly cheesy and nostalgic lines, as they are the theme song lyrics to the television series based off of the classic young adult books, The Babysitter's Club. It's really no wonder that a television show was developed as a result of the success of the Babysitter's Club books in the early 1990s. After all, over 176 million copies of the series have been sold since its inception, and that figure is likely higher than that at the time of this show's release. It has been 35 years since the very first installment, Christie's Great Idea, was first released in 1986. My sister was an avid reader and enthusiastic fan of the Babysitter's Club series, as her first job was, well, babysitting. Coincidentally, Becky often used the money she earned babysitting to purchase Babysitter's Club books. With that being said, on today's show, we'll be discussing the legacy and impact of the Babysitter's Club, the brainchild of the book publisher Scholastic. What was intended to be just a four-book series evolved into hundreds of books, several spin-offs, a few TV series incarnations, and even a feature-length movie. So grab your favorite notebook, your landline phone, and your kid kits. Here we go. Hello and welcome back, and thank you so very much for tuning into the Pop Culture Retrospective Podcast, a show inspired by, and in memory of, my big sister Rebecca, and her love for all things pop culture, especially the people, places, and things of the 1980s, 1990s, and early 2000s. If this is your first time joining us, my name is Amy Lewis, and I, in case you're not aware, am very talented because I am a captain aboard a pop culture time machine, the one that you are listening to. It has been almost a month since my last episode, as I've been busy with visits with family, traveling, and researching and planning for future episodes. You are tuning into episode number 32, The Babysitter's Club, one of the most memorable and successful book series of me and my sister's generation. On today's show, you will learn all about how the series came to be, what made the book so popular, and why new generations of fans continue to be inspired by these juggernauts of young adult literature. There are two women who we can thank for the development of the Babysitter's Club: Jean Fiewell, who initiated the topic of the books, and Anne M. Martin, who would go on to write them. Martin is the daughter of Edith, who was a preschool teacher, and Henry Martin, who was an artist and illustrator. Growing up, Martin was an avid reader and enjoyed the likes of Nancy Drew and The Wizard of Oz. Later, Martin attended Smith College. She studied child psychology and early childhood education. She graduated in the late 1970s during a time when women were fighting hard for equal rights. Perhaps this powerful movement had an impact on what Martin would eventually write about. Foreshadowing, perhaps? She began her career as a teacher, but eventually moved on to editing and landed at Scholastic. While working there, she met a fellow colleague named Jean Fiewell, who suggested a book about babysitting, because a previous book released about the topic called Katie's Babysitting Job was very popular. Martin took the idea and ran with it. She decided to write from a middle schooler's perspective because it came naturally to her. And if you've had the pleasure of reading a Babysitter's Club book, you will know that she is essentially an expert at doing so. Christie's great idea was first published in 1986. It didn't take off right away, but once it caught on, it grew exponentially. The first run would eventually sell out, then 30,000 copies were published, and those sold out. Then 100,000 copies sold out. The momentum would continue. The first book introduced us to the four main characters of the story and the town where they all reside, Stony Brook, Connecticut. Christie Thomas, she's the club's president. She is sort of a tomboy, if you will, and often wears jeans, sneakers, etc. She loves sports and is incredibly athletic and even has her own softball team where many of the kids that she and others babysit for eventually play on. She has a strong and sometimes stubborn demeanor. Her father left her family when she was little, and her mom starts dating a new man named Watson, and they eventually get engaged and then later married, much to Christie's initial dismay. I could relate to Christie, as I too have always been a tomboy, for lack of a better term, and I was also very upset when my mom started dating after my parents got divorced when I was in middle school. Anyways, she also has three brothers. Claudia Kishi was my sister's favorite character, as Claudia and my sister and me are of Japanese descent and is very artistic. Claudia likes to draw, paint, and makes her own jewelry. She is the club's vice president. The girls meet once per week, and it's in her room because she is the only member who has a phone in her room, and also because she is addicted to sugary foods like candy, which she keeps stashed in her room, and she gives it out during meetings. Her older sister is a genius and often corrects her grammar. Claudia designs the Babysitter's Club logo, which is the Babysitter's Club spelled out on wooden blocks, kind of like the ones that many of us received as young children in the 70s and 80s. Mary Ann Spire is the club's secretary, as she has the best handwriting of the group and is very organized. Those are both qualities that my sister had all of her life. My sister had the neatest and most interesting handwriting of any person I've ever known. I love her signature so much that both me and my dad have it tattooed on our left arms. Mary Ann's mother died of cancer when she was little. She lived with her grandparents for a while when her father was figuring out how to navigate raising his daughter alone. He is very strict with her, but loosens up a bit when he gets married. Stacy McGill is the club's treasurer, as she is very good with numbers. She is originally from New York City, but due to a job transfer for her dad, the family relocated to Stony Brook, Connecticut. Stacy has been diagnosed with diabetes, which she is initially hesitant to tell the other girls about due to how she has been treated. Apparently, Stacy was also bullied for her illness, so her parents wanted to move to a smaller town in addition to the need to move for her father's job. The characters Christie and Mary Ann are based on Anna Martin and her real-life best friend, Beth. When they were kids, Beth was always starting clubs with Martin. Further, Martin did babysit when she was a teenager, so the topic of her writing was truly fitting. Like I said earlier, the first book of the series is called Christie's Great Idea, and the tagline on the cover says, "Four friends and babysitting. What could be more fun?" In this book, we get to meet all the girls, how they know each other, what their families are like, and the moment Christie realizes that she has a brilliant idea. Christie's mom is in desperate need of a babysitter one day, and despite making several phone calls, she is not able to secure anyone to watch Christie's little brother. So, Christie thinks to herself, what if there was a club, which initially includes the girls mentioned earlier and other members, where a bunch of babysitters get together at the same time and are available to answer inquiries while together to help ensure families in their neighborhood can secure a reliable, safe, and knowledgeable babysitter? Christie's a goddamn genius, if I do say so myself. Why didn't I think about this when I was a teenager? Oh, that's right. I hated babysitting, unless it was for my cousins. I especially hated babysitting for that family whose house was always a huge mess. Their counters were always full of crap. Their basement was full of crap. Oh my God. Couldn't stand working there. And neither could my sister and one of my childhood friends. But anyways, and to add to this genius idea, the girls agree to collect dues when they form the club, which can be put toward food at meetings like pizza and candy or for kid kits, which is a collection of activities and arts and crafts to do with the kids while babysitting. Further, they agree to keep a journal of all their jobs, including medical and medication information and reports on how each job goes. Each journal entry is written in a different font than the rest of the book is. Each girl has her own personal style of handwriting, and apparently this was done by one individual artist who worked at Scholastic. Which, can we talk about Scholastic for a second? I don't know if your school did this, but mine certainly did, where we got a paper pamphlet every month that had a bunch of books in it that were published by Scholastic. And I don't think me and my sister were ever able to order any books, but there was that one kid in my class who did. And so every month he'd always have a stack of fresh, clean, nice new books delivered to him from Scholastic. And I was really jealous of him every month, that little bastard. Anyways, as I mentioned, Anne M. Martin was able to write as if she was in the mind of a middle school student. In fact, her writing sounds a lot like how my sister talked and likely thought about things when she was a teenager. Here's an example, which is a passage from Christie's Great Idea. The Babysitter's Club. I'm proud to say it was totally my idea, even though the four of us worked it out together. Us is Mary Ann Spire, Claudia Kishi, Stacy McGill, and me, Christy Thomas. I got the idea on the first Tuesday afternoon of 7th grade. It was a very hot day. It was so hot that in my unair-conditioned school, Stony Brook Middle School, the teachers had opened every single window and door and turned off all the lights. My hair stuck damply to the back of my neck, and I wished I had a rubber band so I could pull it into a big, long ponytail. Bees flew into the classroom and droned around our heads, and Mr. Redmont, our teacher, let us stop working to make fans out of construction paper. The fans didn't do much except keep the bees away, but it was nice to take up 10 minutes of social studies making them. I always loved getting teachers off topic. Anyways, here's another example where Christy and Claudia are discussing subjects at school. All right, I'm going to go start some of the math. Now, here's a question for you. When do you think we will ever need to know how to multiply fractions? I don't know. Have you ever seen anyone besides teachers and math students do it? No. Do you need to do it in order to go shopping, cook dinner, or babysit? No. I rest my case. School is stupid. Goodbye, Claudia. Goodbye. The second story in the series is called Claudia and the Phantom Phone Calls. The tagline on the cover says, Claudia's not sure she wants to find out who's on the other end of the line. And on said cover, we see Claudia holding a child on her hip with phone in hand, but it's not a cell phone, of course. It's a rotary phone. In the story, the girls keep receiving prank phone calls while they are babysitting, but it turns out to be the boys that they have crushes on. The third story is called The Truth About Stacy. In this story, the girls learn more about Stacy and how she is living with diabetes. In the first book, the girls think she is on a diet as she often doesn't eat the junk food that they are often chowing down on during meetings. However, it turns out that she is diabetic and her parents struggle to accept it and how to best approach it. The tagline on the cover says, Stacy's different and it's harder on her than anyone else. Recently, I was visiting with my family in Connecticut, coincidentally, but not in Stony Brook because that town is fictional. That's where my nieces and nephew live, and I was telling my youngest niece about how I was reading The Babysitter's Club as part of my research for this week's show. I love The Babysitter's Club, she exclaimed, especially the book, The Truth About Stacy, because she has diabetes, just like me. Who knew that a 30-plus-year-old book could have such a positive impact on my little niece? She saw herself in Stacy, and that brought her great comfort and visibility. How profound is that? The fourth book is called Mary Ann Saves a Day, in which Mary Ann ends up babysitting for a child that is sick and ends up having to call 911 to get help. The original cover has Mary Ann sitting next to a child laying down, and she's looking at a glass thermometer with a worried look on her face. The tagline on this one says, Mary Ann's on her own. Can she take charge? Dear God, I hope so. She looks worried and that kid looks sick. Anyways, the fifth book is called Dawn and the Impossible Three, which focuses on the newest member of the Babysitter's Club, Dawn. She ends up babysitting for three children who end up being very overwhelming, as is the parent. On the cover, the tagline reads, Dawn thought she'd be babysitting, not monster sitting. The original cover is classic 80s as Dawn is dressed in an oversized blue button-up shirt. Her pants are tight rolled above her white scrunch socks and leather penny loafers. There is a tube TV in the background on a TV cart with a VCR. Further, she is clearly irritated by the three kids who are all crowded around her as they stand on hideous green carpet. So that was just a taste of the first five books of the series, but there are 131 books in its entirety, as well as 15 super specials, including one where they go on a cruise and visit Disney World, my sister would always tell me about, 3 dozen mysteries, and many, many more spinoffs. Later books would introduce additional characters like Dawn, who we just talked about, as well as Logan Bruno, Shannon Kilborn, Abby Stevenson, Mallory Pike, and Jesse Ramsey, among others. The original and infamous book covers were primarily painted by an artist named Hodges Soleil, please forgive my mispronunciation, who also did artwork for another popular book series at the time, The Boxcar Children. I distinctly remember The Boxcar Children having a strong presence in our elementary school library, but I never picked one up. I looked up the synopsis, of course, and apparently the gist is that 4 children take up residence in an abandoned boxcar when their parents pass away, leaving them as orphans. Sounds like an uplifting read. Or not. Eventually, the books became so popular that Martin was writing a Babysitter's Club book each month. Her daily schedule routine was essentially as follows. Wake up early and write on yellow legal pads from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Soon, she was writing about 30 books per year. That included 12 Babysitter's Club books and spinoffs like Super Specials, 12 Little Sister books, 6 mysteries, and 4 Miss Coleman books. In later years, there were portrait collections about each girl in the story, as well as graphic novels, which are more recent. Martin once said that the hardest book for her to write was called Claudia and the Sad Goodbye, which is book number 26 in the series. In this book, Claudia deals with the loss of her grandmother, which was written around the same time that Martin lost hers as well. At one point, Scholastic, who, as we know, published the Babysitter's Club series, wanted to develop a television series. Although the books were incredibly popular, trying to get a network to develop a show was a tough sell. Allegedly, many network executives thought that a TV series aimed at young girls would not be very successful. One executive apparently thought there should be more male and boy characters added, and another thought it should be a cartoon. What a bunch of morons. Thankfully, Scholastic, which I'm just loving Scholastic right now, didn't agree with these suggestions. They knew their characters and stories were strong enough to carry their own show. Instead, they created a straight-to-VHS special, and it would go on to sell over 1 million copies. I believe we had one of those, or maybe we recorded it off of the TV. In 1990, HBO picked up the show and released about a dozen episodes, which also ran on Nickelodeon. If you are interested in witnessing 90s fashion in all of its glory, the fashion that's making a comeback right now, check out this show. You can watch most of the old episodes on YouTube. I believe all of these episodes were also released on VHS tapes, which you could get through mail order. First, they were released by a company called Good Times, because it is a good time watching that show, and later they were released by KidVision. The KidVision versions came with temporary tattoos and stickers. The tattoos appeared to be Lisa Frank-inspired, as they were incredibly colorful and stereotypical, of course, for the time. For example, one was a purple panda, another was a heart with hearts inside, another was a rainbow with stars, and one was a moon with a smiling face. Avriel Hillman played Christy Thomas, Megan Leahy played Marion Spire, Jessica Prunell played Stacey McGill, and Jenny F. Winslow played Claudia Kishi. The show ended its run in 1991 and includes the theme song with the lyrics I mentioned at the top of the show. Take a listen to this classic tune. You can always count on me, and I can count on you. Good times, bad times in between, my friends will see me through. We'll be sharing.
Straight from the
In addition to the stickers and temporary tattoos that came along with a VHS purchase, there were several other Babysitter's Club merchandise items available at the height of the series' popularity. At one time, you could get a Babysitter's Club doll, board games, and even bedding. In the board game, the goal was to collect 3 different colored tokens. You had to answer questions about what to do in various childcare situations, as well as answer trivia questions from the books. Later in 1996, after the release of the movie we'll discuss in a moment, you could purchase a computer game called the Babysitter's Club Friendship Kit. The CD-ROM allowed you to create your own stationery, write in a journal that was password protected, and taught you how to maintain an address book and how to keep track of birthdays. Had that CD-ROM come out a few years earlier, when my sister was a little bit younger, I'm sure she would have wanted it and would have played it endlessly, as she loved all that kind of stuff. You can find both the board game and the CD-ROM for sale on sites like eBay and Etsy. 1995 saw the release of a Babysitter's Club feature-length film. The film apparently drew on inspiration from 2 of the Babysitter Club books, number 45, Christy and the Baby Parade, and number 86, Mary Ann and the Camp Babysitter's Club, neither of which were written by Anna Martin. Because the stories were so popular, Scholastic had to enlist ghostwriters to help write some of the Babysitter's Club books. The film stars Skylar Fisk as Christy, Bree Blair as Stacy, Rachel Lee Cook, who you may remember from She's All That, and that infamous anti-drug commercial where she swings around a skillet to symbolize the destruction that can be caused not only by carelessly hitting fragile items with cookware, but also by opiate drugs like heroin. At the time, I remember it actually being pretty powerful. Also in the movie, Tricia Joe starred as Claudia, Stacey Lynn Ramsover as Mallory, Zelda Harris as Jessie, Vanessa Zima as Rosie Welder, and drumroll please, Larissa Olink as Dawn. You may remember Larissa from the Nickelodeon series called The Secret World of Alex Mack, in which the main character, Alex, gains unique superpowers after getting accidentally spilled on by toxic chemicals on her way home from school. The show ran from 1994 to 1998. Although I would say I was a moderate fan of the show, I was a little bitter when I found out that The Secret World of Alex Mack replaced Clarissa Explains It All on SNICK, which was the block of shows that ran on Saturday nights on Nickelodeon, aimed at young teenagers. That is a crime. Clarissa Explains It All was an outstanding show, and everyone wanted to dress like her back in the day. Olink also starred in an episode of another fantastic Nickelodeon show from the 1990s, The Adventures of Pete and Pete. By the way, I own both seasons of the show, which started out as a short, on DVD. The original book series ended its run in 2000. The final book is actually a super special, and it's called Graduation Day, where the members of the Babysitter's Club finally graduated from 8th grade. Good Lord, took them long enough. Anyways, in 2010, a prequel to the original Babysitter's Club series was released, and it's called The Summer Before. Like I mentioned, by this point, the series had been out of print for about 10 years, but it seemed like Babysitter's Club fans just couldn't get enough. The prequel was written by Martin, and it discussed what happened with the girls before they joined the club. Scholastic decided to re-release the first 7 books in the series, but some items in the books had to be updated, i.e. taking out references to Walkmans and the VCR. By the way, if you're interested in learning more about the history of the Walkman or VCR, check out episodes number 14 and 21 of the Pop Culture Retrospective. Shameless plug. And sadly, perhaps because they were dated when the stories were re-released, the covers of the Babysitter Club books were all redone, and the painted covers were redone. No more penny loafers and rotary phones. Instead, basic covers were used and will likely continue. When I checked out the very first book in the Babysitter's Club series from the library, and the librarian handed me this revised version with a different cover, she gave it to me, and I said, "What the hell is this?" That didn't actually happen, but I thought about it in my head. I'm very disappointed. Very disappointed. Anyways, more recently, Netflix has created a new generation of Babysitter's Club fans as they have their own TV series based off of the infamous books. I had the pleasure of watching a few episodes recently, and as much as I really despise reboots of pretty much anything, come up with something new, please, I did genuinely enjoy watching the show. 30 years after seeing the first TV series based off of the books. One of the best parts is that Alicia Silverstone plays Christie's mom. She's still just as beautiful as she was in Clueless and all of those Aerosmith music videos. The show is done very well and includes pretty awesome music, which is a lot less cheesy than the original show, like songs performed by Lizzo, and is updated to reflect a more diverse group of girls and situations, which I certainly appreciated. It's definitely worth checking out if you have younger kids or friends or family members, or if you grew up being a fan of the books. I think my favorite part of the show is when the girls formally meet for the first time and plug in a landline phone to use for business inquiries. One of the girls purchases the infamous Connor see-through phone that was super popular in the 1990s. Much to their amazement, it still works and lights up. The impact and ripple effect of the Babysitter's Club series, especially at the height of its popularity, is a testament to the power of solid children's literature. The stories inspired a lot of girls to start babysitting club businesses. Further, Stacy having diabetes led to many readers being diagnosed with the illness or provided a sense of normalcy for those who were already living with it. Another reason for its prowess also had to do with the relatability that the girls in the books had to the kids reading it. The girls in the Babysitter's Club dealt with divorce, death, loss of a pet, blended families, disabilities, sibling rivalry, and eating disorders, to name just a few. Martin received hundreds of fan letters each week, and I now can definitely see why. Martin has said that she wanted to show that girls could be entrepreneurs, even if they were young and could make mistakes. She also wanted to show that girls were concerned with things other than boys. I, too, have never been concerned much with boys. Anyways, I can just certainly appreciate all of that. Martin also wanted kids to learn from her books as well. Most books have a letter to the reader in it, written by Martin, where she offers readers advice on what the topic is, i.e. if readers were babysitters, they should make sure to get accurate phone numbers from clients, like the pediatrician, work numbers, etc., or information about calling emergency services. According to an article from the website Mental Floss, if you were to stack all of the copies of The Babysitter's Club sold by the year 2000, 176 million copies to be exact, they would reach as high as 77,203 Empire State Buildings. That, my friends, is a lot of books. I hope you've enjoyed this look back on The Babysitter's Club, a book series that has been a favorite on bookshelves and e-readers for over 30 years. In an article from The Atlantic entitled The Legacy of The Babysitter's Club, writer Jen Dahl said that, quote, "Along with serving as easily digestible monthly installments of sheer reading pleasure, the books taught a lot of girls, and boys too. There was a sort of boy babysitter underground," says Levithan, who was an editorial director at Scholastic, "though the audience majority consisted of girls. Lessons of empowerment, entrepreneurialism, and individualism. For some of us, the series also taught us how to love reading and maybe even how to write. It immersed us in the world of Stony Brook, Connecticut, and gave us a taste of what we might be able to accomplish in our own lives. It also taught us how to deal with common problems teens might face, ranging from the simple annoying sisters and brothers, trouble at school, to deeper social and cultural issues like coping with chronic illness, parents' divorce and remarriage, and racism. It's surely not surprising that this writer was a big fan of the series, but so were many others, including some of the editors who worked on the books at Scholastic. And also, my sister." If you are enjoying the Pop Culture Retrospective podcast, please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. Please also tell your friends and family about the show, and please rate the show on Apple Podcasts, as it helps tell more listeners about this fabulous time machine. And by time machine, I mean a desk that is set up in the corner of my room with a microphone and a laptop, but you know what I mean. I hope you'll join me for my next show, where we will be discussing one of my all-time favorite musicians and rappers, Missy Misdemeanor Elliott. Until then, be kind, be safe, and hold on to your memories.